Hi there, this is Carla Owen, Chief Executive of Animal Free Research UK, and this is my Animal Free Labcast, the show dedicated to a kinder modern science that puts humans at the heart of medical research. Today, I'm talking with Martin Day, who is the MP for Linlithgow and East Falkirk in Scotland. Martin is the SNP's health spokesperson and chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Human Relevant Science. I'll be asking Martin about his love for animals and the impact he's making for them in Westminster. We'll also hear all about how MPs from across the political spectrum are working together to advance animal-free research, and why now is the perfect time to raise this issue with your MP. So, welcome to the Animal Free Labcast, Martin. I'm so glad that you're joining me today.
Yeah, delighted to be with you. I've been looking forward to having a good chat on an issue that I care passionately about.
Fantastic. Can I ask you just to start off by introducing yourself in your own words to everyone listening?
Yeah, certainly. I am Martin Day. I am a Member of Parliament for the Linlithgow and East Falkirk constituency in the Central Belt of Scotland at the Westminster Parliament, where I act as the SNP's health spokesperson. I take an interest in a whole range of issues, animal rights being one of them, medical research being another, and on top of that, I'm a rather mad cat lover. I have a mad cat, and I'm not sure if he's madder than I am, but we can have a competition to find that out later. That's a wee bit about me.
Thank you. And you're really well known for your work on animals in Parliament. So what is it about animals? Well, you know, you have a cat.
Yep.
When did you first become an animal lover?
I'm not sure I can quantify when. I think I just always have liked animals. As a wee boy, I always wanted a pet dog, and I wasn't allowed one. You know, parents being parents, they got the compromise position. They persuaded my grandfather, who lived near us, to get a dog instead, so I could visit the dog. So I thoroughly enjoyed that. And that was probably the best of both worlds. Got the fun of playing with the dog and none of the grief of walking and picking up after it.
But absolutely.
So I don't begrudge them. Not, and given the size of house we had, we really wouldn't have been able to look after a dog, which was actually the right decision. You realise that as you get older and everything that goes with looking after a pet. And I know from looking after a cat, he's an outdoor cat, and he comes and goes through his own flap. But I'm up and down the road to London, you know, 3-4 days a week. So I've got to have relatives in feeding him and stuff. So it is a huge undertaking that you can't take on lightly.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's it. I've just always liked animals, you know, from the childhood days when I had goldfish, and later on we got a budgie, which actually I think is really cruel, keeping one of a bird on its own in a cage, you know. I would never willingly have another budgie, you know. If something happened to a friend and I had to take on a budgie or something like that, I wouldn't see it, you know, neglected. But I wouldn't be going out to deliberately cage a poor creature.
And so is that kind of love for animals that you've always had something that's been important for you to kind of bring through into your political work?
I think it just permeates in. It's part of your sort of subconscious when you look at issues, and it's the same with not just animals, humans as well. You know, you just care for other sentient creatures and want every living being to have a good quality of life and enjoy itself and have a bit of fun. You know, and it's how we can benefit every aspect of society, and animals are part of our society as well as fellow human beings.
Absolutely. And is that something that you find that constituents are interested in?
It certainly is. And I say this, and I sometimes worry about the volume of correspondence we get. But I know, because I speak about animal rights on a regular basis, that prompts correspondence.
Yeah.
But we often feels like we get more people getting in touch regarding animal rights than human rights.
Oh gosh, that's interesting.
And I always think, you know, and I'm sure the individuals that care about the animals equally care about the humans. They just don't write to me about them, you know.
I think that's one of the sort of sweet spots that we've got at Animal Free Research UK, is that we care about animals, of course we do, it's in our name, but also about humans and about human health.
Yes.
And about patients yeah. getting access to the medicines that they need. Can you tell us a little bit about how you became involved and how you are involved with Animal Free Research UK?
Yeah, well, I've been delighted to take part in a number of debates over the years, and I'm currently chairing the all-party parliamentary group for Animal Free Research. So that's gives me an input into some of these debates as well, and hopefully means I get called a little earlier in the debates as well. You know, let the speaker know these things. So there's some benefits to that from a procedural point of view, as well as being able to get stuck in on an issue that's I think is really important. And I think that was the joining the dots for me when I found out about the organisation and the good work that it does, that it tied in with my love for animals and also my desire to see humans get the best possible treatment. And the two are not exclusive. They actually complement one another really, really strongly, because as we know, something like, I've forgotten the figure, 92, 93% of animal research is completely pointless. You know, it just doesn't benefit human beings at all. And other methods are actually more effective. And the more effective results we can get for human beings, the better it is for everyone, the humans and the animals concerned. So it just dovetailed really nicely together, and delighted to be involved and help out where I can.
Oh, well, thank you so much, because you have such a strong voice in Westminster on behalf of this issue, and it makes such a difference. What do you see as the impact that you're able to have?
So sometimes at Westminster you get very frustrated wondering if there's any influence at all on occasions, but yeah. I think we do have an influence, and it's in a number of different ways. Firstly, there's the public awareness side of the issue. So when we speak about it or we do something, it does get noticed by elements of the community locally and nationally.
Yeah.
And there will be people who are passionate about the issue and already agree.
Yeah.
But there'll be others who every time we speak about it come to it for the first time and think, oh my goodness, I didn't know that. Why on earth are we still doing these animal tests? You know, this doesn't make sense when there's these other better alternatives out there. It makes no sense at all. So it gradually gets a public awareness. And I think, you know, the more we chip away at it, the more we get through to government ministers and civil servants that have to do the briefings. And it often feels like the machinations of government move glacially slowly unless there's somebody's
really
pet project
does.
At stake. And all too often, the pet projects aren't the ones that we're interested in, but the real stuff needs to get up that agenda. So the more times we ask questions or we take part in debates, the more times civil servants have to brief the ministers. The ministers look at the issue, they then think about it. And I think the level of public support for this issue is such that it would be a no-brainer for someone to bring in a decent bit of legislation.
Absolutely. It's definitely something that, you know, with your help, we've been pressing for and hope to see in the next election, or in the next government, if not earlier.
Yeah, no, I think so as well. If you know, the next election is an ideal opportunity for people who care about the issue to write to their current MPs, but also to the candidates that stand across all parties to shift that dial a bit, so that it becomes, you know, just natural that the majority of the people who get elected, or even those who don't get elected but influence their party policy, that it becomes policy and then gets into a programme for government and then gets through the legislative process. It's a sort of three-stage hit there to get to the end result. And this gives us an ideal opportunity to really just, you know, kick it up the road a wee bit and get it a bit closer.
What kind of legislation do you think would help, Martin? What would have an impact?
Well, there's quite a few things I think that we could do. I mean, the current legislation is out of date and not fit for purpose, in my opinion. The necessity to have animal testing built in just seems bonkers. Also, we should have, and it's not too late to still make amendments to some of the other legislation that's there, but the Animal Welfare Act and the Animal Sentient Act, you know, laboratory animals should have been included in that.
And they're not, are they?
They're not.
Always treated as different to other animals, which is quite staggering.
Yeah, and they're not. And in fact, compared to other animals, they undergo a lot more trauma and pain, you know.
Yeah.
So if anything, they should be included, and it would certainly then see a move away from some of the experimentation. But ultimately, we need a we need a human-specific technologies act, and to make sure that we are, you know, up there at the cutting edge of the modern technology, and we're not left behind to other nations. So there's an economic benefit to doing this, as well as an animal rights and a human health boost as well. So it's, you know, what's not to like? It's just a win-win-win situation. I think, you know, that's the legislative position, but to get to the legislative position, we've got to get the general acceptance that something needs to be done. And I think the missing link between public awareness and government preparedness to do something is we really need some kind of public scientific inquiry to just look into the issue, to bring out all the facts. So it's a facts-based decision that gets taken to then bring in the legislation. And I think that's the bit that's missing, that would just get us over the edge.
And I think something like that could help the government to see what is happening in other countries, because there is more progress being made in countries like the Netherlands, but also in America, which, you know, America doesn't have a great kind of reputation for animal rights. But the new FDA Modernization Act that came into force at the end of last year has tackled that piece of those regulations that we've got in the UK that say that animal testing must be built into getting a new drug to market. And the FDA Modernization Act has kind of knocked that on the head in America. So we're getting left behind.
Yeah, we're certainly being left behind. And that's a real danger. And I mean, our life sciences sector in this country is one of the great innovative technology areas that we could really be boosting our economy by supporting. And we need to, you know, so we're helping animals and we're supporting the economy and the research sector. To me, it's a no-brainer. And I think the more people look at it, the more people realise it's a no-brainer. We just need to get that impetus into a government programme. And you know, I don't want to be critical, because governments have to deal with every issue under the sun simultaneously. So, you know, we've got to get a piece of legislation drafted. We've got to get civil service time committed to it, as well as, you know, ministerial guidance to get it through through Parliament. So there's a few stages in there. And I say this as an opposition member, we can be quite constructive and helpful when there are issues like this out there. So, you know, it doesn't need to be a battlefield. I don't think it would be a battle at all. I think it would be pretty plain sailing with broad cross-party support. So, I mean,
it's not a party political issue, is it, this one?
It's not, no. And we see that in the debates that have taken place. We get people from all parties, and pretty much, you know, if we all got a bit rushed and confused in the tea room and picked up the wrong speeches, we'd all get away with it, I think. You know, it's that kind of style, you know.
Please consider making a donation to Animal Free Research UK today. Your support fuels our mission and means science wins, patients win, and animals win too. Please visit animalfreeresearchuk.org/donate. Thank you so much. So have you built kind of good relationships with people from other political parties through this kind of issue?
I think we have. I mean, it's fair to say sometimes it feels like we hunt in a pack, and it's a lot of the same people. So as well as being on the same side, you know where people are coming from, and even with the subtle differences, we are all pushing in the same direction, and those relationships are good. And that also means a piece of legislation would be properly scrutinised by a reasonable cadre of knowledgeable parliamentarians coming from a range of different views. So we would get something pretty good out of the sausage machine at the end of the day.
And as the health spokesperson as well, presumably you've got a kind of patient kind of, or NHS kind of angle on this.
Well, yes. And it quite simply for me is it would just, in my opinion, speed up the amount of, or not the amount, it would speed up and reduce the time taken to get new procedures and medicines onto the market. If we missed out the unproductive animal testing part, I mean, if we look at the examples from history, penicillin's the obvious one that jumps out, that it was seriously delayed because of the need for animal testing. And then we had issues that delayed and frustrated HIV processes as well, things that would have made a huge human benefit for countless families, all delayed simply because we had this process that wasn't productive and didn't get us results. So, yeah, it's as I say, it is a no-brainer.
So I completely agree, Martin. It's a no-brainer. And I think it's something that it will happen. I think our job is to speed up the rate at which it happens. So do you have any sense of that? What do you think is realistic? What do you think would be ambitious?
Difficult to put a time scale on it, but I do think we need the kind of public inquiry stage, which would take a bit of time. And to do it properly, we kind of need to fit that in there. I think that really helps us overcome a lot of the barriers and hurdles. The other barrier and hurdle is, and I've said this in debates, and I hope it's not too controversial, but I think there's a serious vested interest in firms that do animal testing. I mean, the scale of it is just, it's breathtaking.
It's big, you know, big business, isn't it?
Huge business. There are millions of experiments that happen each year in this country. And then there are millions of animals that are bred for experiments and slaughtered without ever being used. So there's all of that, you know, costs money, and somebody's paying for it. Probably us through higher costs for medicines and stuff, but it's being paid out to firms that are making a nice profit, or they wouldn't be doing it. So you know, the reality is they will lose that element of business, while other businesses which aren't yet benefiting are the ones that would be the beneficiaries. Many of the people in the life sciences sector would be massive beneficiaries. So we need the people who would benefit lobbying government as strongly as the people who would lose out.
Absolutely. I sometimes draw parallels with climate change, and, you know, it's creating a new economy around these alternatives. So alternatives, in our case, to animal testing in the climate, you know, renewable energy sources. But you've got these big kind of monsters that, you know, the oil industry and animal testing, you know, these big industries, where you can't just get rid of them overnight. We need to kind of build up new economies that will replace them.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I think the length of time it would take to do a public inquiry would do a part of that. The legislation would be drafted. People would then see, well, their business isn't going to survive this new regime. And there would be time for that to transition into something more positive before the legislation passed. So it, you know, it doesn't need to be a cliff edge, as much as I would like the suffering to end as quickly as that.
Absolutely.
But the reality of the process is that it will take an element of time. So that does give the people who are making a living on that a chance to transition to something more ethical and more sustainable.
I know timescales are always difficult to put on and feel a little bit arbitrary sometimes. At one point, the Netherlands had got a deadline for a transition to animal-free research approaches by 2025. They dialed back from that. Sometimes we kind of think, well, maybe 2040 this might be possible by. Do you have any view on that, Martin?
Well, my first view is everything does take time to bring in, and government processes are glacial in their very nature.
Yeah.
And if we want proper legislation that's, you know, I's dotted and T's crossed, then we can't rush these things. But equally, I wouldn't want to be waiting as far as 2040 to end that level of suffering and to speed up the processes. I mean, the reality is, from medical sciences advancing at such a rate, we cannot afford to sit back and miss this opportunity. So we need to move reasonably quickly on it. But one of the frustrations with, you know, consultations is, you know, and I say this as an opposition member, we criticise government for not consulting. When they consult, we criticise for how long the consultations take. And when the consultation finishes, we permanently keep hassling for when are we getting the outcome and the results. So it's never fast enough, and that will be the case no matter how quickly it does go. I think, you know, if we're being realistic, it's hard to imagine it not being a few years. But if there was willpower there, there's going to be a new government in short order, I would think. You know, the election's probably next year.
Yeah.
If it's a 5-year term, it's not insurmountable to deliver a piece of legislation in a full parliamentary term. So I think that would be the target I would be challenging for us to try and do it in. And if it slipped a bit from that, as long as we're well down the road, I think we could live with that.
Yeah. Well, that's really encouraging to hear, because it's, you know, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because a lot of us come from, you know, that love of animals and having that ethical position, and we just wish it would have ended, you know, well, that it would never have started or ended, you know, a number of years ago. But we do need to be realistic about how long, like, as you say, it's a glacial pace of government and legislative change. But 5 years is a you know, that's fantastic for a kind of an end in sight.
Yeah, I think that's the target we have to set. You know, we want the next parliament to do it.
So have you ever come across any difficulties in speaking up for animals and for human relevant science, Martin? Have there been barriers for you?
No, I've certainly had no pushback from the public. You occasionally get some individuals who think, if only you were shouting more about X, Y, or Z, whatever their pet project is. But that they would say that irrespective of what issue you were talking about, and other than the one that they're particularly favourites on, you know. So you just roll with that. I would say, if anything, the biggest problem is finding enough time to shout about it as much as I would like, because there are so many issues that you are involved in, and if you're going to do a subject justice, you do have to prepare and look up the latest information before you go in and talk. You can't just, I've spoken about this 3 times, I'll just repeat what I've said before. You know, you have to refresh your pitch a bit. And even if the ethos and the underlying points are the same, you know, the world doesn't stand still, so you have to keep on top of the developments. So I think that's more of a burden than any backlash. And you know, you do get the occasional legitimate person who says, oh, I want my medicines tested before they're tested on a human. But it's just because they don't realise there are alternatives there. And once that's pointed out, folks say, oh, why aren't we doing this?
So when someone says that to you, Martin, how do you respond? Because I think that's something that listeners will have as well. Like, what's a good answer to that question?
Yeah, I try and keep the response as simple as I can and keep it to first principles. And the basic principle is that animal research simply isn't a good enough predictor for what will happen in humans. And then I can give examples of the delay to penicillin being introduced, the frustrations to the AIDS, HIV treatments, and just the stat that 92-93% of animal tests don't translate to human beings. So it's kind of pointless. And I think when people see, now, if they're hardline and you're not convincing them, they'll say, but that other 7% will make the difference, you know, and you just don't get there.
Yeah.
But that does it for most people.
And do you find that there's sort of particular types of people who are more kind of aligned with this and more bought in than others? Because you obviously, as a politician, meet so many different people.
I can't honestly say I've noticed an obvious demographic or type of person that's less understanding than others. I think, you know, that most people, when they hear about it, think, well, why aren't we putting more into the human relevant side once they know it exists, irrespective of whether they think animal tests should happen or not. There's you know, I think most people think we should stop the animal testing and go completely down the human relevant side when you speak to them. But there are other people who think, well, why not do both? So why not have, you know, a twin track approach? So most people think we should be doing something a bit different.
Yeah. And what can people listening to this, who don't have a brilliant supportive MP like you on this issue, what can they do or say to their MPs to try and get to raise the profile of the issue and maybe get some change?
Well, I would say, you know, never give up. And someone's, you know, one of the most important parts of any democracy is people can change their minds. And so, you know, if your MP isn't yet supportive of it, unless they're absolutely hostile the other way, it's probably just because they haven't had the time or the information to look into it. And they've been dealing with other priorities in their area. So I would not write anybody off as a lost hope if they get presented with facts, you know, and they can verify that the facts are actual facts. Then if their premise is based on different facts, then they might well change their mind. You know, that is the nature. I would go into the issues, but I have started off representing constituents on issues where I wasn't entirely sympathetic. But by the end of the process, I've thought, you know, actually they had a point, and that's right. You know, they should have been treated better, you know, and your attitude does change as you look into a situation. So I would say just don't give up. Just keep asking them and present them with some facts, you know.
There's always hope.
There's always hope. Indeed there is. And I think the other positive factor, if people are presenting their less supportive MPs with facts, is that their MP colleagues and their MP colleagues right across the house from all parties, they will have colleagues and good friends in Parliament who are passionate supporters. Mm. So, you know, there is another angle there. If they're getting it from multiple sides, they might just say, well, so-and-so is reasonably sensible and this person's written a half-decent message to me with some facts and these facts all check out. Okay, maybe this should happen, you know, so don't give up.
And MPs do listen to their constituents.
They do. Some listen better than others, but I can tell you this, everyone will be listening this side of an election.
Absolutely. So if you haven't yet written to your MP, now is the time to do it.
Indeed, very, very much so.
Martin, it's been such a pleasure speaking with you today. Thank you so much for joining me on the Animal Free Labcast. And more importantly, thank you for all of the brilliant work that you're doing in Parliament to stand up for animals and to speak out for human relevant research.
No, thank you very much for inviting me on. It's been a very pleasant afternoon having a chat, and happy to talk again once we see if there's any progress when we see the new legislative programme.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Martin.
Thank you.
MPs are hugely busy. They deal with every issue under the sun and don't have the luxury of being able to hone in on just one area, like I'm fortunate to do. So I'm always so grateful when a politician like Martin Day chooses to dedicate their time to championing animal-free research. As he says, current legislation is out of date and not fit for purpose. So we need every shred of positive help we can get to raise this issue up the political agenda. And it really is a win-win. Whether you're advocating for the life sciences sector, for patients or for animals, using human-specific technologies to develop medicines for people is a no-brainer. And whilst the political process is painfully glacial, now really is the time to take action and write to your MP about this issue. We've got the technologies, we've got the evidence, and in the run-up to the next general election, politicians are paying attention. So let's get it done. Well, that's all we have time for in this episode of the Animal Free Labcast. In the next episode, I'll be chatting to Dr. Meryl Ritskus-Heutinger, recipient of Animal Free Research UK's 2023 Pioneer Award. If you've been inspired by this conversation and want to help, the best way to support us is by visiting animalfreeresearchuk.org/donate to make a donation, if that's something you can do right now. Or if not, then you'll find loads of other ways you can support medical research that's helping cure diseases faster without animal suffering, including raising the issue with your local MP. From me, Carla Owen, thanks so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please do share it far and wide.